All right. Welcome back to the podcast. If it's your first time, welcome. I'm Paul Mercurio. We're going to be getting to the guest this week in just a second. But before I do, I live in New York City, and I figured out that if you live in any big city or even a medium-sized city, it's tough to cross the street. You know, the light changes and you get the walk sign, but people are still just blowing through, you know. Cabs are coming through, people on bikes. It's sort of like you have to cross the way, like, you know, the way Aaron Rodgers goes up to the line and he starts to read the defense and yell out, you know, which defender to pick up. He just does an audible. It's like, watch out for the bus coming through. Cab, we got a cab. We got a bicyclist going the wrong way, being entitled and arrogant about it. Oh, there's a homeless guy with two bags of cans. There's a mother with a carriage. There's a rat with two bags of cans. Ultimately, I just took a cab across the street. It cost me $4, but I felt safe. It took me 20 minutes, but it was worth it. I'm alive. All right. So my guest this week, Danny Clinch, a photographer, just an amazing guy. He's photographed some of the biggest stars in music: Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, Bruce Springsteen, Tupac Shakur, and he's done a really cool documentary about Pearl Jam, and it's centered around the 2016 Chicago Cubs World Series run. Eddie Vedder is a huge Cubs fan, and he does it through the lens of that experience that Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam went through, because in August of that season, for two nights, they played at Wrigley Field. So it's a really cool look at the band through the lens of the World Series and the Cubs. A really cool guy, and I hope you're going to enjoy it. I really like talking to the guy. And keep leaving comments on iTunes. If you haven't done so, please do so. Say a couple of nice things. It always helps. Appreciate it very much. And enjoy Danny Clinch. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's podcast. Very, very interesting and talented guest with a really cool documentary film out right now. I welcome Danny Clinch, director, photographer, who has a film out called Let's Play 2, the Pearl Jam documentary centered around the 2016 performance that they did at Wrigley Field, and a really, really cool documentary and a really interesting guy. Hey, Danny, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So the movie just released a couple of days ago. It's worldwide. And I really love the conceit of how you sort of, obviously, Eddie Vedder's sort of a huge Cubs fan, and sort of the whole conceit of it is built around that great Cubs season. And I relate to the Cubs because I'm a Red Sox fan. So I went through 86 years of, you know, waiting for a World Series. And you have a history with Pearl Jam. You did a film on them, of their tour of Italy in 2006. And how did this idea come about? Was this your idea, something you guys collaborated on initially?
Well, you know, I went to the 2013 Wrigley shows, mm-hmm. With Pearl Jam, Wrigley show, and it was pretty epic. And, you know, everybody understands, all the fans understand Ed's connection to the Cubs,
right,
and to Chicago, having grown up just outside of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started kicking the idea around, you know, we're going to do two more shows at Wrigley, and we want to capture these. We felt good about it. We think that they're going to be epic shows. And it's something historically for the band that they wanted to capture. So they hit me up, and of course, I'm always throwing my hat in the ring to work with Pearl Jam. And my relationship with them has been a long one. And so, you know, the idea was to just let's capture these shows and see how everybody feels about it. And we all absolutely felt great about the performances, about how we captured it. And when we were done, you know, having a beer after the show, I looked at Eddie and Theo Epstein, the GM of the Cubs. And I said, hey, you know, if the Cubs are going on a run, I'm coming back with my cameras. I got to capture this moment.
Hmm.
And, we all, you know, said, let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
And so, a little bit later, I was, you know, at that point they were four wins away from the World Series. Yeah. So, you know, they were going into that series for the National League Championship. And I was there. I was there for that stuff. And then I flew to the win, which was just an incredible ride. And we could only have hoped it would turn out that way. And I
was thinking about that. Like if it didn't, what was the plan was to follow it through to the end one way or the other?
You know, I think if you've seen the film, that you see that there's a story there beyond the Cubs winning.
Right.
That was just truly icing on the cake. I mean, that really just brought it home. Mm-hmm. However, I think the story would have been the same to a certain extent. It's a story about, hope and people's sort of like love of the game and love of Pearl Jam.
So one of the things, you know, obviously it was a dream come true, you know, the Cubs win, dream come true for Eddie, for Cubs fans. And I think probably on some level for you as a filmmaker, it's a sort of a nice capper to the whole thing. So I know there was a bigger point to this film than, you know, chronicling the Cubs win, but how I was curious in watching this and reading about it, like what happens in your plan if they don't win?
That's a good question. I think that, at the end of the day, I don't know that it would have changed that much, except for, you know, you think about the ending and the song All the Way that Ed wrote for the Cubs, mm-hmm. Someday We'll Go All the Way, at the request of Ernie Banks, a big Cubs player, legend.
Yeah.
And I think that like the film would still be the same. It's kind of like it's a story of hope and devotion, mm-hmm. you know, from not only the Pearl Jam fans and the Cubs fans alike, but also, Ed, look at Ed and his hopes and his devotion to the Cubs all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find it to be, you know, like a great opportunity to parallel, the two stories, you know, like the rock and roll part of it with the baseball part of it, and how they feed off each other, and how we connected the songs to the scenes before or after, and the little cues that Ed gave before a song, and mm-hmm. how that stuff kind of, mm-hmm. you know, would set up maybe, you know, the next song or the story and the thread and keep the thread going. So, to answer your question, I think the film would be very similar in a way. Only I just think that the ending would have been left with, you know, Someday We'll Go All the Way versus I don't ever have to sing that song again.
That's hilarious. How do you get access to the level of people that you've, and artists that you've chronicled through the lens, you know, Tupac, Bruce Springsteen, Johnny Cash, Blind Melon, goes on and on, Dave Matthews Band. How do you get access to the point where it's meaningful, but you're not, but you can be unobtrusive at the same time and sort of allow them to be themselves and not feel like they have to put on some persona because they're being photographed? That to me seems like a tricky yeah. proposition.
Yeah, you know, like I'm a big fan of the document. Like when mm-hmm. I studied photography in school, I studied documentary photography. People like Danny Lyon doing socially conscious stuff and Robert Frank. Mm-hmm. And these people were heroes of mine. And like, you know, they would just kind of infiltrate somewhere or some place with people and get comfortable and gain trust. And it's about trust,
right.
and friendships and stuff that take a long time to cement. And so I've known them for a long time and we've worked on projects before. And I think, you know, that's why they had me come out, because they know I'm not going to be a guy with like three cameras and a sound guy sticking mics in their faces and like
right.
getting in the way of the process,
right.
you know, the process, like my job is to, you know, I'm filming their show. Like they're not in my film.
That's the difference.
Right. That's the approach that I take. It's like, I want to give everybody respect, you know, from the band to their crew, to everyone there. And, you know, and so once we understand that, and after years of spending time together, you know, then there's like just this unspoken kind of communication where we know, like, I could get a little sideways glance and a little shake of the head, and I know that I'm going to like kind of walk away from
that moment,
you know, from the situation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of stuff is super important because, you know, it allows me to capture the good stuff, you know. And a lot of what I was doing was wandering around with a, like a little handheld camera, like something that was very, very, what I would call a quiet camera, you know, something that's very small and is not like a big camera on my shoulder where I'm peeking through the eye thing. And like, there's like this sort of thing in between the two of us. Right. It's a more sort of like a handheld thing that I can film and remain, you know, kind of like invisible as I can be. Mm-hmm. And you know, as well as hiring, you know, all my favorite camera operators and all, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, it was also important for me to have a camera to capture these intimate moments that like, that one of those big cameras wouldn't be allowed into,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it was a balance between that stuff and you know, me, you know, using that small camera.
So. Yeah. So technology, advances in technology actually allow you to do your job more effectively and keep the intimacy, which is the whole key to these docs, right?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. You know, being able to shoot, like we wanted to shoot 4K, which is the highest resolution that you can shoot these days.
Right.
And the big cameras shoot it no problem. But the fact that these small cameras shoot it now is really, really cool.
Yeah.
And again, like a band like Pearl Jam, you know, they're not people who'd Snapchat backstage and show what they're going to wear or, you know, like post to Instagram, mm-hmm. you know, from backstage. They keep all that stuff kind of private.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to allow me in to film backstage while they're talking about the set list or for them to allow me to film their rehearsal for these two shows at Wrigley on the rooftop of Murphy's bleachers bar,
yeah.
was just incredible, you know? And, you know, there's a moment in the film, where the band is on this rooftop in Chicago with the L train running by and the Cubs, Wrigley Field in the background, and they're having a conversation and you honestly feel like you're sitting in a chair, like, next to them, like conversation, everybody's chiming in, they're having a laugh. And it really shows, I think it shows, the love and camaraderie that this band still has with each other after all these years. And you have your ups and downs and you go through your hard times and all that. But I feel like, you can see just how much they care about each other and how much they care about their fans and
yeah.
you know, how they want to do the best job they can and give the fans something really special.
Did something come out of this documentary for you, as a fan or filmmaker, that was unexpected, was it, the flip side of that, was it sort of difficult to get something out of this that you really wanted to get out of this, in some way, shape or form as the filmmaker?
I mean, I feel like it was really cool to see, you know, what, at this point, you know, having been around for so many years and, you know, hearing Mike, for example, Mike McCready in the film talk about, you know, what the music, how important it is to him that the music means so much to people. And he's like, I'm enjoying it now more than ever because we have all these songs that we can draw from.
Mm.
And people, I run into people on the street all the time who just tell me how much this music means to them.
Yeah.
And like, what more could you ask for? So I think something like that is really cool. And I think seeing like even visually how we connected baseball to rock and roll.
Yeah.
And the idea of like, you know, the band's walking to the stage, you know, they're walking to the stage or walking into Wrigley Field. And then you cut to Rizzo, the Cubs first baseman walking out to first base.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you hear, you know, the woman who owns Murphy's Bar, Beth, say, you know, Ed loves the Cubs, you know, and he's always talking about the Cubs and like, you know, we see the Cubs all the time. We want to know about Nick and Keith and Paul and Bruce, you know, and then you cut to Ed talking about, having seen Bruce at Wrigley Field and how Bruce talked about, you know, the ghosts that are there and the, you know, of the past and,
right.
And what does the future hold?
Right.
And, you know, the whole time feeling like, you know, that that Ed is probably secretly saying to himself, man, if the incredible happens and the Cubs go to the World Series, like, you know, how can I set this up for us? You know?
Yeah. Well, that shot of him flopping on the home plate, just like, it's so great. Like, you just see the little kid in him, you know, and I really relate to it. Cause like, I was a Red Sox fan. I am a Red Sox fan. And that when we finally popped the cherry and, you know, the curse was gone, it was just like, it's just a very hard thing to explain to somebody who hasn't been through it that for that long, you know. And my father's passed away, but I remember him being a big fan and thinking about him. Yeah. It's one of those moments that a lot of different emotions get pulled in through something that you didn't expect, which I think is, you know, it's a great thing about baseball or sports or anything that sort of brings people together. So if you're a filmmaker and you're doing a fictional piece, you can control everything. You've got your set, you've got your actors, you can control everything right to the dime. This, with documentary, sort of best laid plans, right? You have to be nimble and you're hoping to get this, but then the other side of it is you get things that fall into your lap that you didn't expect. And how do you plan for that? How do you plan for not getting the thing that you wanted to get? And how do you make sure you're ready for getting something that comes across that you didn't expect?
You know, I think as a filmmaker, you know, a documentary filmmaker, you spend a lot of time prepping and just being really prepared. And as a photographer, you know, you're capturing moments where, you know, you have one shot at it. You know, it's not like a series of images coming together like you do with a film. And so you can be rolling your camera and catch half of what's going on and still be able to weave that into your story. Whereas a photographer, you can't miss any of it to a certain extent.
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, I prepare myself and I'm ready, and I do a lot of research. I do a lot of waiting. I do a lot of like, you know, gut instinct type things. Mm-hmm. Like we should be here, we should be over there. And sometimes you fail, but the payoff is huge when you nail it, like being somewhere when something's really happening. You know, I feel like, you know, there's a moment in the film where we cut to a still photograph of mine. And I could see the song was building up, and it was during a live, and Ed was blowing Matt Cameron, and that to me was like a unspoken conversation. I could see he was about to do something. So my guess was he was going to jump off the monitor. Mm. And so I got down really low. I focused on the monitor so I wouldn't miss it. And sure enough, Ed ran off and like leaped up, you know, into the air, like super high. And I captured this photograph of him, you know, with Wrigley in the background, all the fans below him, and he's just like sailing in the air. And, wow. And we used that in the film, which was really, really cool.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, you have to keep yourself open to the universe. You know, you have to, I've always done that with Pearl Jam, and they always seem to deliver. Mm. You know, there's so much soul going on in their world that the band is usually firing on all cylinders.
Well, but I'm sure you contribute to that by creating a very safe environment for them where they don't, you know, where you sounds like you have the art of blending into the scenery in a way, and that makes them feel like they can just be themselves, right? They're not being photographed. And do you ever have situations, you know, you've photographed major, major people and even people that aren't, you know, huge stars. Do you have to get an okay from them, you know, on specific pictures or images, or do you have difference of opinions, and how do you resolve those? Like what is the sort of the creative license you have on that side of things?
You know, I think that, you know, it comes down to relationships and trust.
Yeah.
And if I feel like there's anything that is, not appropriate, or I wouldn't say not appropriate, because that just would be out of the question. But I think if there's any doubt that I have, I ask for approval.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I have the time and stuff, and there's, you know, there's no reason not to ask for approval, you know, on something, but you know, they trust me. So, you know, I have a lot of these relationships with people. And you know what, it could be Pearl Jam. It could be, you know, Bruce Springsteen, but it could be, you know, the smaller bands, of these days, like, you know, My Morning Jacket and Alabama Shakes and, you know, Jason Isbell and these people. And like, if I felt like something was compromising, or I felt like I wasn't sure if they looked good, or, you know, like, I love this picture, but, you know, maybe I see a reason why they may not, let me just run it by them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of my goal usually.
You, before we wrap, I just, you interned for Annie Leibovitz. I'm sure that was an experience. I know you went to the New England School of Photography, and, not far from my home turf of Rhode Island. And what did you, I mean, somebody like Annie, and working with her, what were the big takeaways for you? And what did you, what came out of that, that surprised you, that you didn't expect, and what did you come away with in terms of a base of knowledge?
Yeah. You know, with Annie, I learned that, that as magical as her photographs are, and they are magical, you know, that there's humanity there. There is a person there taking those photos, you know, and when you actually see someone take the photo and then you see it put in a magazine, you're like, okay, this is a process, and this is how it's done. But when you just see them in the magazine, they just look so magical.
Right.
It almost looks like, my God, did somebody actually like make these decisions to get this thing and then snap the shutter at the right time and like all those things. And, you know, I always thought like, I wanted to be like Annie. I want to be Annie. I want to do this stuff. Like, look what she's doing and how she lights it and this, all this production. And it's like crazy. It's just so cool. You know, and then I just realized, like, you know, that I'm not her, you know, and that I am myself, and like, and that I took things that suited my personality from her, which is, you know, the obsession of chasing after what you believe in and what you love, and and trying to be, you know, try to capture a moment, and the way she worked with people was something I learned from. But you know, again, I think the biggest thing I learned was that I was Danny Clinch, you know, and that I was going to take things that worked and suited my personality, and that I wasn't her, and I never will be, you know. And then I worked with also other photographers like Steven Meisel, who's a great fashion photographer, and a guy named Timothy White, who also photographs celebrities and does a lot of advertising and stuff. And these people were like, you know, I took something different from each one of them. You know, Steven worked, you know, although he's known a lot for the studio, the way he sees natural light was like really exciting to me. And I was like, wow, I'm going to take that from him. And I'm going to take, you know, the way that Timothy works with people and how quickly he moves and keeps everybody, you know, cause if you sit around and you have someone like, a musician or an actor or somebody who, you know, you just don't want to waste their time. You know, you want to just keep moving.
Yeah,
you want to be prepared, and you want to be prepared, and you want to be able to execute in an efficient manner, things like that. So like, you know, I came away from that stuff feeling really honored to have worked with those people. And, you know, what you realize in the end is like, you know, the biggest thing I think that artists, you know, photographers, filmmakers, like struggle with is like, what's my style?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is my style? You know, like everybody's like, you have to find your style. You have to find your point of view. And my style, I realized after banging my head against the wall, is that it's, what is it that I like, you know, and what, what do I like? I like music. I like old cars. I like motorcycles. I like, you know, I like black and white. I like grain. I like Bolex film. And I like, you know, I like a wide lens. I like being in the middle of things, you know, and that sort of stuff, you know, and there's my style.
Yeah. And that defines you, know? You as an artist. Same thing as I'm a stand-up. And it's the same exact thing. You start out doing stand-up and you're like, you're doing kind of what I call surface jokes, you know, about the cost of soda or whatever, like just general stuff. Cause you're not comfortable enough to reveal yourself on stage.
Right.
And over time you get comfortable, and then you just start to talk about what you give a shit about. And if people come along, they come along, but then that's how you develop your fans, because they're connecting with you based on your life experiences. So it's the exact same thing. It's like, you know, you watch a Richard Pryor, you watch this kind, you know, and you maybe you're influenced by some writing or point of view, but eventually you've got to arrive at your own place creatively. So it's the exact same thing. I totally get it.
Exactly.
The film is out. It's out everywhere. And it's a really, really cool look at Pearl Jam and, you know, baseball and the intersection of the two and, you know, pursuing your passion and being passionate about life. It's just a lot of cool themes in it. And I hope everyone goes out to check it out. And you have a website as well, DannyClinch.com, right?
Yeah, DannyClinch.com. And I think you should follow me on Instagram, which is DannyBones64. Because I put a lot of the things that I'm doing on there. I really like Instagram, being a visual guy.
Yeah.
And then for all the screenings, of course, you want to go to the Pearl Jam Let's Play 2 section of their website, because the screenings really all over the world. It's pretty incredible. And I know it started this past week, but they're going on through the middle of October in places like Finland, you know, and Australia, and just even a place I think called the Bear's Claw in Anchorage, Alaska.
Cool. There
That's
you go.
Where I want to see it.
So, yeah, exactly. Sort of get a few beers and hang out and then go out and take a walk in the woods. That'd be awesome. Hey, listen, thanks for coming on. This has really been great. And it's a really great, great film. And your work is tremendous. And I wish you the best of luck with it. And we'll talk to you when you have your next project out.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care. Danny Clinch, the film is Let's Play 2. Go see it, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right, that was Danny Clinch. How cool is that? He interned for Annie Leibovitz. Like, just a really, really cool guy. And the pictures are amazing. You should go to his website. You can see some amazing stuff. And check out the documentary. And please spread the links around to my podcast. Let your friends know about it, your family. We want to keep building our supporters. And please leave some comments on iTunes. That always helps. You guys are great. Thanks for checking things out. And hope you enjoyed Danny. And we're going to get a new one coming up next week.